I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right. Hope everybody's doing well today. I want to welcome everybody to the Unimpressed podcast today. We have comedian Sean Walsh calling in today on the podcast from London, England, right? What town you in over there?
I am in London. I'm in West London. I wouldn't normally drink coffee at this time, but I'm trying to realign myself with you.
Tell me what's going on in your world, and you know, it's a new world. What's going on in entertainment in London?
Well, the stand-up comedy world in London has, for the last couple of weeks, we've called it, I don't know if you had this, Boris Johnson, our Prime Minister, called it Freedom Day, where everything would open up, there would be no restrictions, no masks. Did you have a Freedom Day?
A Freedom Day? That's weird.
Yeah.
A Freedom Day sounds weird to me.
It's don't worry, it sounds weird to all of us as well.
Oh, okay. What is that supposed to mean? What does that entail? Did y'all have a Freedom Day?
Yeah, so the Freedom Day entailed the opening of everything. So from the theatres to the comedy clubs to the sports stadia, you know, the arenas, with no restrictions, no masks, no 2 meter gap. And So really, it's been since March 2000 and what was it? I'm getting confused. It's 2020. It's been since March 2020 that we haven't done a gig without any restrictions. So The difference between, you know, doing stand up to a half full crowd that all have to sit apart from each other and you're not allowed more than a group of, I think it was six. The difference between that and then coming back to being, you know, on Freedom Day, to being able to play full rooms, has just been so huge. And it's so good to be back. The difference, I don't think any of us realized. I think we forgot.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
How good it was. And so it's great to be back now in the swing of things, playing to full crowds. That's where we are in the comedy world.
So you're wide open now. You're playing to full crowds. Are we staying that way? Because we're backtracking a little bit over here right now. Hopefully you guys are going to lead us the right path and stay that way for a little bit.
I mean, I don't know look, I wish I had the exclusive on that. I think that the numbers, from what I can tell, are down. I mean, in terms of like the law and the rules, things are pretty back to normal. And I don't know. I mean, there's talk of things going into a lockdown again in the winter. But I think I don't know. I would love for you to tell me what it's like over there, because here there seems to be a slight bit of, and luckily from what I've done, it's not been affected thus far. But there seems to be a hesitancy from a lot of the British public to go back out and spend their money that they've lost for the last year and a half. I think it's about people are sort of playing it safe and recuperating some of that, you know, that finance before they go out and enjoy themselves again. So it's still a bit weird.
When you talk about your comedy career.
Yeah.
And where'd you grow up?
I grew up, well, so I'm born in London, but then I moved to a small town. It's not that small, but a smaller town on the south coast called Brighton, which is kind of, it's basically the UK's San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a very bohemian, artistic, sort of a very liberal world. Uh-huh. And that's where I started comedy. So
okay.
I'm back in London now. I've come back.
So is there a big world of comedy in London? I mean, what is the genre like over there?
It's huge. I mean, it's absolutely huge. It's very much like New York. I look at New York when I get the opportunity to go over, which I'm going to do again in December. And I was meant to be over there in August, but something, work thing came in and I couldn't go, which I was gutted about. It's very much London is the cousin of New York, I think. There are just clubs everywhere. You can like sort of quadruple gigs. You know, you jump on the subway, we call it the tube, you get to the other gig, you get on the tube, get to the other gig. In terms of like the style compared to America, used to be very different. But because of the globalization of the internet, the globalization of things like Netflix, where now American stand-up comedy is on the doorsteps of all of the, you know, the British audiences and the young British comics that are starting, you can see the influence. It's so funny, right? John, I don't know if you know, but like the sort of style in America to us, you know, like the cap and the hoodie. Uh-huh. You know, like the trucker cap and the hoodie and just going up with your jeans and your, what do you call them, the sneakers. No one would have dressed like that on stage in this country 10 years ago. People would be in suits. British comics, comics would basically be in suits. If they weren't in a full suit, it would be a blazer. At least a nice shirt. And so now, it's so funny, you go into the club and there's a guy in his 20s and he's got his cap on and his hoodie and his jeans. And you know, like, the guy watches American stand-up. And like, there's the leaning on the mic. You see the young guys and you got these English guys that all think they're Bill Burr. It's hilarious. Yeah.
When you say, you know, comedy is about relatability, right?
Absolutely. You know,
and simple relations. And when you have a cultural difference in comedy, yes, being subjective.
Yes.
Where's the fine line? Where's the transfer of that? And how does that work? I mean, what comedians translate, I guess, American comedians translate in London?
Well, obviously, you know, I think, say, you know, I mentioned him, but I think that,
I mean, and you can talk about it. And when I say translate, you can talk about it like, you know, story related, you know, Bill Burr is going to, you know, come try to cut your throat. Obviously, I think Bill Burr would do great over there, right?
Bill Burr recorded his last one. Bill Burr recorded his last special at the Royal Albert Hall in London. Like, and that's to, I think, 5,000 people. And he did two nights. So like, you know, Bill Burr is one of the biggest comics in this country. Seinfeld, again, all basically, all of your big names, sort of translate over here. I think that there's a part of me, I said this to someone the other day, I think, and, you know, I'm very conscious here that I don't exactly know what I'm talking about, but just from what I see, just from what I witness when I've been over to LA and I've gone to the Comedy Store and even played the Comedy Store, and I gone to New York and then watched the specials, you get this side. In American stand-up seems to be a bit, there seems to be a bit more of an acceptance with freedom of speech. And there's a bit more acceptance that this is, that the comics are joking. No matter how far they push it,
mm-hmm,
they're joking. And I think that although the likes of, you know, Chappelle and Stanhope and Bill Burr, that although they're huge names in America and now are huge names in Britain, if they had started off here, I think they would have been like blue comics. Like, as in, I think the material would have been too raw. You can't, you certainly couldn't.
You can't be. Now, see, my impression of that, and I think we're on the same page here. My impression of that is I would think people in London are a little more tougher than the American. You know what I'm saying? Like, Bill Burr can come off a little more harsh in London than he can in America. I would think he would have more people love him in London than he would in America with his style of comedy.
With his style, obviously he's loved in America, and yes, he's loved here. But what my point is, the sort of complicated point, really, the English comedy scene, and I think just culturally, look up to America. America is, it's very aspirational. People want to, you know, you always hear the phrase like break it in America. People want to make it in America. Like that's the end game really for anyone here.
Yeah.
And I think that had Bill Burr been English and was saying and doing the sorts of routines that he does, had he been English, I think he would have had a lot tougher time. In Britain, we accept that he's saying it because he made it in America, but had he been British and tried to start off on our circuit saying those things, British audiences and certainly the British media, who are extremely sort of conservative, would not have had it.
Interesting. So you get, if you have that American reputation, you get somewhat of a pass when you come to London.
Absolutely. That's it. I would say that's fair. And I think that would be difficult to dispute. Yeah.
Interesting, I think I saw that special when he did in London, and it just seemed like the response of the crowd, because like when he goes on these crazy rants and talking shit about everybody, I saw him, that one he did in Philadelphia years ago. I mean, he pissed off a lot of people. He hurt a lot of people's feelings, but he didn't give a shit. You know what I'm saying? He didn't give a shit. But and when I saw that special in London, it just seemed like they were a little more accepting of him talking shit about, I think he did a bit about big women or something in London or something. I can't remember what it was. It was something. There was a couple of little things that seemed pretty harsh to me that seemed like the crowd accepted easily.
Yes. Well, he's in a very, he's in a very fortunate position now, like the dream where, he's playing to the audiences, that want to see him, that are there to see him and want to see him, push the envelope.
So,
yeah, push the envelope. And they loved it, didn't they? There's like, they're just screaming. But I don't really have to tell you the funny thing, John. I gigged in LA before I gigged in New York. And everyone had sort of said to me, now there's the obvious thing of, you've got to change the reference. So I have a routine about a Hoover, which you'd call a vacuum. Or, obviously you have to change all of the little references. That pretty much goes without saying. But everyone would tell me to sort of, I had so many notes like, slow it down. Slow it down, because even though we're speaking the same language, the accent will just take everyone a couple of notches to tune into. And what were the other things like? Don't perform as much. Keep it, sort of hide the performance. And so I went over and I was doing these things, but I wasn't really enjoying it so much because I was having to sort of adapt the way that I do it, which is the way, of course, that I am. Mm-hmm. And once I think it was in New York in this amazing club in Brooklyn called, and the night is called, I think it's Names to Look Out For. Or no, Names You Should Know. Names mm-hmm. You Should Know in Brooklyn. It's such a great night. And I just did it the way I would do it here. Obviously, I changed the references, but I just performed it the way I would perform it. And it was the best gig I'd had in America thus far. And so from that point on, I just did it the way I did it. And I think people overthink. The English comics, the British comics that are going over to America, overthink about, adapting it for you guys. It's just be you. That's always the answer is be you.
I agree with that. I think we have a lot of experts. You know what I'm saying? Everybody thinks they're a friggin' expert. My thing is, and I study human behavior every day because we have a massive online following with different multiple pages. I think we have about 50 pages in our network.
Wow.
And I can really determine what people will do. And that's very hard to understand outside looking in until you can see how people respond to things and you can see how people get this data and they utilize it for their advantage. So this is what I tell my comedians. I'm like, when I sign, bring somebody on, I said, they've already have somewhat of an established fan base, but you may need to clean that fan base up, if you will. Right.
Yes.
Because ultimately they're trying, you know, comedians are trying to make a living. And when I say clean it up is like, let's get some, a fan base that can buy tickets.
Yeah.
Right. So I tell them, do not worry about anything, you know, any responses you get, because I think if you're you, if you're this piece, you know, if you're this puzzle that's put together and the puzzle is complete and you are consistent with that tone and that narrative, right? You will attract and keep the right fan.
Yes.
Right. And I think that can be said on stage as well. And I think a lot of people out there are kind of full of themselves trying to give advice to a comedian that, you know, has a certain tone, has a certain feel, has a certain narrative on stage. You can't, I don't think you can change that. Does that make sense? I've always said, hey, I'll help you with timing and I'll put you, you know, I'll create an outline and a stage that you can feel your relatability in. So yes. To your point, I agree with that. Be you.
I think it's that. I actually think it's the one of the hardest things is to completely sort of get rid of any, you know, any influence and just really hone in on what it is that is funny about you, or not just funny about you, but maybe funny about the way you see the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And try and make that as authentic as possible. I think that's the hardest. It's actually taken me too long. Do you know what? I think I did work it out when I started, and I went quite myself. I was quite good. It was quite good. It really was. There was no sort of.
I think to some extent that's what industry does to some comedians, because comedians absorb everything.
Exactly.
Yeah, they absorb everything, and they're very, very insecure.
I can confirm.
you know what I'm saying? And if you start there and that's what made you successful, I think you should stay there.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? I think you should stay there. I mean, obviously you can evolve how you deliver yourself to the public. That will evolve naturally. But I think if you have an idea and a framework that works, I think you stay within that framework and just expand on the tags, expand on the narrative. Always know your framework.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And enjoy yourself, you know, I mean, yes, but also enjoy yourself. You know, I find, right, you know, I'll be honest with you, I find the writing side of it, although it's so satisfying when it works, it's almost the relief of it working. I'll be honest, I find writing stand-up incredibly stressful. It's such a stressful process. I'm trying to find the funny. I think I find the funny, but that might not be the funny because I've got to find out when I then tell it to the strangers, and then they're going to tell me whether it was funny or not. Like the whole thing is, it never ceases to stress me out. But the performance side of it is the bit that's the bit I love, is the actual acting it out. That's the bit that gets me going. And so I've been going quite a while now, you know, I've been going like 14 years, and you could probably, we can say 13 if we include the lockdown, I think. if we include the pandemic of 13 years, but that's why I do it. That's the reason I do it, and I don't want to do it any other way.
Yeah. Let me ask you this: what's your daily life like?
My daily life as a
you're living, and I want to see if I can, you know, kind of pull in what I was saying to maybe your life and being a comedian. This is just a mindset. It's kind of hit with me. It took me a while to understand this about these relatability things. So if you walk through your day, what do you do that's just mundane and normal?
So every day when I wake up, one of the first things I do is there's a local cafe around the corner. I wake up, I put my clothes on, and I brush my teeth. I've not even had the shower yet. I just go around the cafe. And I know there's quite a social environment. It's like, it's almost like Central Perk in Friends. Sort of go there, you know everyone.
and I have a coffee and I just relax, right? And I just, this is going to be the part of the day where I don't have to stress and I don't have to work. And then I'll come back to the flat or the apartment, if you will, and start on the work, whatever the work is. So if it's I've got a set to do tonight, I'll go over the set. One of the things I do, I've just remembered this. I have a gig diary. Is it here? I can show you. No, it's in my bag. I have a gig diary. And if I've done a gig the night before, what I do is the next day, I'll write down a little report of the gig. So what happened and the do's and don'ts. So the next time I'm in the environment of that gig, I can look to see what I learned from that gig.
So let's look in. How many people go to coffee shop?
Well, how many people are there when I'm there?
No, how many people go to a coffee shop? How many people you think in London go to a coffee shop? Very relatable thing.
Very relatable thing. That's where everyone is going.
Okay, so if you have a mental mindset of what your day is supposed to be, where's the storyline that is the disruptor? Right. So you got the relatability, right? You got the framework and the relatability of going to the coffee shop every day. Right.
Yeah.
So where's that personality that comes in to the coffee shop that throws you off? That could be funny to all these other people that go to the coffee shop. That could be relatable to them.
Oh, well, I think, okay. So yes, I see what you're saying.
I'm trying to build something here from the ground up, you know, that's relatable, because it's like I'm a father, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes I do this content and I can get in character being a father, because that's who I am. And I can do a good video and say, hey, when your daughter wants to buy clothes all the time, when she makes you late for a reservation, all these simple relations. You know what I'm saying? So
yeah.
I'm sure there's a ton of people, and I'm just talking about this, just kind of just unveil maybe a thought process of creativity for comedians or actors or whoever. But if you have, you know, the relatability is that coffee shop,
yeah,
or Sean's disruptor that everybody could relate to, that would be funny within that coffee shop run.
Okay. The angle that I would come at that is a lot of my stand up pattern that is developed in more recent years is it will come from somewhere that is that relatability, that is that. It's that sequence from life that people can relate to. What I bring to it is that I can't cope with it. That's normally, that's what the act is. The act is me not. It's a bit like, I would say, if I was going to explain it quite simply to an American, it would be like Seinfeld, except he can't handle what he's talking about.
Yeah. Gotcha.
So what I would say is, relatability is the cafe. What I would say is immediately, I would be running late. Disruption is this cafe trip won't be smooth for me, because I'll get to the cafe and I'll realize that I forgot my wallet. And then I'll realize that actually I also forgotten my keys. And then I found my wallet, but it doesn't have my card in it. There's a panic to my stand up. I think if you ever watch it, you see it, there's a panic and there's a frustration and an exacerbation of every situation. So it won't just be, have you ever noticed about in the cafe? It will be, I want to tell you about, have you ever noticed? But I was running late and I've also spilled coffee down myself and I've burnt my hand. Do you know what I mean? Am I making
You lost your keys. You lost your wallet. Totally. So, now I'm trying to bum money from a guy there to buy me a coffee.
Totally. I did a show last night. I really like this. If I don't mind saying so myself, I thought that obviously we want to get ourselves, our act across as quickly as possible, and preferably, if you can, which is extremely difficult, if even before you get to the mic, the audience can sort of understand what it is they're about to see. Maybe by the way you look, by the way you walk. You know, if you're an energetic act, you're going to be really flitting to the microphone, you know, and if you're if the actor's going to be slow and more paced, you'll just slowly walk to the mic. And so I sort of wanted to find my own version of that. And what I thought I'd do is instead of saying hello, I don't say hello, say the first syllable of hello, which is hell, but I say help. I say hello. I grab the mic and I say help. And I think straight away, one syllable, it's like, and straight away, it's okay. This guy's going to have, he's having a difficult time.
Yeah. I like that, because everybody has a derivative of that relatability, you know, and that's, you know, you have that direction, right? Where are you going with that angle? That's pretty cool.
Oh, good. Thank you.
I like good. That. Well, I mean, do you have family over there? What do you do? You see a lot of family, or you just into your work all the time? And
So obviously we've had our lock. You didn't call it lockdown, did you, in America? Quarantine.
Quarantine. Yeah. Well, it's like lockdown, quarantine. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So you did. Yeah. You did use lockdown. Okay. So we had the lockdown, and that gave me as awful as the whole, you know, as the whole thing has been. We were put in a unique situation where we were given a lot of time to A, reflect, but B, also a lot of time to actually think about. Really have the time to think about what it is you're going to do moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And so do you know a British comic who does a lot of stuff in America? He's done the big comedy roasts. Do you know a guy called Jimmy Carr? Do you know Jimmy?
Name Jimmy sounds Carr? Familiar.
He's a big name here, but he's done a lot of stuff in America as well, and he's also done, you know, he does Montreal Comedy Festival just for laughs and all of that. But he, you know, he said to me that he just made me remember how, and occasionally you have to be reminded, he just reminded me of how lucky, how unbelievably lucky we are to be doing the thing that we dreamt of doing, to be doing the thing that we loved growing up. And he basically... it was almost him that set me this goal of like what you want. He was like, what, you know, what do you want? Visualize it. And you've got to do everything you can. And basically everything you do in the next 5 years has to be about getting that goal. So I'm very busy. I'm planning on a big fucking holiday in 5 years time. But until then, I'm just trying to do everything I can to be as creative as possible. And I do get tired. I don't know how Jimmy Carr does it. I don't know how these comics that, you know, are putting in those hours every day are doing it, but I'm trying to emulate them. I'm exhausted, but I'm also loving it. So I'm just working really hard.
Well,
it doesn't suit me because my friend, I never used to be like this. It's been I've always cared, but I've always kind of, if I'm honest with you, avoided doing the work. And so it's been, it sounds so obvious, and you'll know it yourself. It's so obvious. It's just so obvious. The more you put in, the more you get out. I mean, what?
Yeah.
Why didn't I listen when I was 24?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I guess you get to a point in life where you just say, hey, I got to make a commitment to myself.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I think I did the same thing. You know, I think 15 years ago or whatever, I didn't have my eye on the ball per se.
Yes, now, exactly. That's it.
But now I got my eye on the ball, you know, because if I don't, then, you know, shit's going to fall through the cracks.
A lot of it.
You know, and I'm looking at one of your videos here. You got some big tall letters behind you. What type of show was that you were on? Was that in London? My girlfriend, she's a vegan. What is that?
That was probably, there was a big charity gig that we had. They don't actually do it anymore, but it's playing to like 15,000 people at the O2 Arena in London.
Oh, okay.
And so it's a long time ago now. And it was a big gala with all of the UK's biggest names. It was the night goes on forever. It's like, you know, 3 hours. everyone goes on, does 5 minutes. But to be able to, I did it like four times to play the biggest venue in the UK, indoor venue. Like, yeah, 15,000 people. You walk out. It's crazy. So it was it was an amazing time. And I was a lot younger as well. So you didn't really, I don't know if I ever really knew, because it's just happening to you. When it's happening to you, it's very difficult to, I think, when you're younger, to really appreciate how extraordinary what you're doing, you know, how extraordinary it is. Yeah. And I look back now and I can't believe it. But at the time I was like, yeah, this is what I do.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we kind of live, I think creatives, you know, for me, it's like, I forgot about yesterday. Today's a new day.
Totally. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, what kind of shows you got coming up, and, you know, with everything kind of opening up for you over there, how's the fall looking?
Oh, it's really good. The autumn, as we call it, the fall is looking really good. So the reason I couldn't, although I wanted to get to New York, the reason I couldn't was because, in fact, it was recorded last night. I just did a spot for a new stand-up comedy show on Amazon Prime, but I think you'll be able to watch in America. That's great. And then over here, we've got a great show that I think they're trying to sell to America. I don't know what's happening with it. It's called the Stand Up Sketch Show. Okay. And what it is, you take your stand-up routine. So all the comics all go and do a show, you know, do 20 minutes or whatever. And all the comics, their sets are filmed. And then they take the audio from the set, and you have, and then you produce a sketch that you lip sync to your own stand up. So you sort of bring your stand up to life and make it a sketch that's lip synced to the gig. And it's so much fun.
Uh-huh.
It's so much fun to, like, and you actually now, you know, comedians do act outs. You are now actually acting out the stand up that you do. So it's so much fun. And I recorded five for the series, and we're going to be filming those in October. So lots of really exciting things coming up. It's great.
So you tell a story.
Yeah.
Right. They tell a story on stage. Yeah. You record it, and then they put it in like a play set, like a set where you dress up and you act out the story.
It's pretty much that, but it's not a play set. So you'll just shoot it like a single camera drama or sitcom, and you lip sync over it. So I'll give you an example. So one of the ones that I recently recorded, it's on season four now, and on one of the ones that I recently recorded, I was talking about when I was a child, and in the summer holidays, we would play soccer, as you call it, for like 12 hours a day, right? When you're a kid, you're like 10 years of age, you go to the top of the road and you play soccer at the top of the road. And we would boot the ball against a fence that belonged to a couple like in their 80s for like 12 days to feel, you know, and if they asked us to keep it down, I would think they were being difficult. And now I'm 35. I look back and I just can't believe, I feel so bad that I was kicking a ball against the fence for 12 hours. So in the routine, I act out booting the ball against the fence, and I sort of repeatedly do it. I do it for like almost like a minute of just booting the ball against the fence. So what we do is we then go and shoot that. We actually go and shoot me booting the ball against the fence. And anything I say in the stand-up routine, I will be lip-syncing in the sketch.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Cool.
It's really good fun. Really good fun.
Cool. Have they pitched it to networks in the US yet or no?
Funnily enough, I'm good friends with the producers. It's the number one comedy. This is crazy. It's the number one comedy show, I think, in Sweden. Sweden bought it. They got they sold them the rights, and Sweden are doing it with Swedish comics. And it's the number one Swedish comedy show. And they've sold it to loads of other countries in Europe. But for some reason, America aren't biting. And the networks aren't biting. I don't know why. I think you guys would love it. It's so much fun.
I mean, these guys over here, I don't know. I mean, I was in television, and it's like they don't know good shit, you know? I mean, let me give you an example. The reason I developed the company I have now is because I got pissed off at television, right? Because I developed 1,000 shows, and all my shows were talent driven. And I'll tell you, this one show we developed, right, was a guy with a White House chef, Roland Mezenay, right? French guy. He was in the White House 25 years, had the longest run of anybody ever in the White House, you know.
Wow.
Yeah. So he served 5 presidents, right? So I had him, I had the talent. I think we had George Bush was on board to do some interviews and for the pilot and all this kind of stuff, right? But what we were going to do was recreate state dinners that were historical, right? Because he knew about a lot of state dinners that happened in the White House that he served food. And, you know, you serve the food of what food was being served, because there's a certain way food was served in the White House and so forth. So he goes through that, but he's walking through a timeline of the historical debate at this state dinner. Who would not want to watch that? They said no. I'm like, huh? Are you kidding me? You know.
Did they give you a reason?
I mean, it's, I don't know. It's the weirdest thing. You know, they got, you know, it's.
But John, what a great time. We're so lucky, I think. We're not beholden to channels anymore going yes or no. They say no. Great, we'll do it ourselves. I've got a couple of things that I'm working on, you know, for myself. The podcast that I do with one of my best friends has just got into the top 10 comedy podcasts in the UK. No one would have had it as a radio show. So we've done it as a podcast and now we're in the top 10. I'm working on another thing just for myself. I've got this idea that I'm going to do and, you know, fingers crossed people like it. But I think we're so lucky that we can, you know, if you're a creator, you don't have an excuse. You don't have an excuse anymore. We can do it. And you can film it on your phone. Just give the people a take, you know, production values. You don't have to worry too much about them on, you know, which people are main, most people are just watching on their phone, on their iPad. So I think we're very lucky to be in this time that we can do this.
Oh, I agree. And I think because we live in an ADD world, right?
Yeah.
I think that Hollywood needs to understand that. And I think a lot of the money they spend on high-end production is wasted because people ain't paying attention to that. You know, you lose people's attention with, you know, when you got these drawn out sagas anymore, you know, it's like, you know, you can't watch a saga.
I think the next Marvel film should be 40 seconds long.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I mean, hey, I thought my idea was, you know, we're trying to develop our own network through this massive social thing, our own TV network, is to be the king of 1-hour movies.
Great. That is a great shout.
You know?
John, I don't think I've ever left the cinema and gone, that was too short.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
I think even if it's if you loved the film, people go, I loved it. That's the main complaint of any film. Every time it was too long.
Absolutely. Well, I don't know. We've been on here a while. I think we've had a good conversation. I think it's been a pleasure.
Rolled, thank you.
We kind of rolled by here, and I didn't realize how big you are. You're a pretty big deal over there in London. So if you're in London, and check out Sean Walsh, he's got a podcast.
Podcast is called What's Upset You Now. It's only 15 minutes long. How do you like that?
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. Get it all in, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Nice. Cool. Well, I appreciate you on coming on the show. And if I'm in London, I'll come check you out. And we'll have to check back in with you maybe in the winter.
That'd be great. Thank you so much, John.
All right, sir. This has been your Unimpressed Podcast. I'm John Edmonds-Cosma, the CEO of Bang Productions. Thanks, Sean. Appreciate you coming on, man.
Cheers, John. Pleasure. Take care.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.